From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Thanks for listening and being part of the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, g'day and welcome to another edition of the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. Was off the airwaves last week due to a little bit of a bug that was going around. I've got to tell you, folks, I've had COVID-19 before, but this was a bout of the flu, and it turned out to be much, much worse than a bout of COVID-19, let me tell you. But look, today we're going to be talking with three great Australians, and I'm very pleased to introduce this first lady who's only recently come onto my radar. We've been friends on Facebook for a while now, but I got to tell you, I'm very, very heartened to hear that we have these kind of people in the Australian community and that they are powering on. The person who we're going to be speaking to for the next hour is Anita Donlan. And Anita, I'll lead up to what Anita is doing, but Anita was raised in a small country town on the Adelaide Plains. She left school, as most people did back in the day when they were 15, and she went to work in the local bakery. She ended up buying that bakery at the age of 19 years old, and owned a decent local business. After a family tragedy at 16 and feeling the whole community wrap their arms around her and her family, she quickly came to realize something that a lot of people have only begun to realize of late, and that is that community is everything. Months after buying her business, the local bakery, the local supermarket expanded, and it hurt every small business in town. We've heard that story before, and the rest, as Anita says, is history. Today, she's in Bendigo, a Bendigo girl, and she's still passionate about small communities. She's passionate about the well-being of small business. She's passionate about local businesses like the local pub, passionate about farmers, passionate about our truckies, passionate about everyone who actually makes not just rural Australia, but the entirety of Australia tick. She's ran for Parliament not once, but twice, but three times, glutton for punishment, a bit like me. Now, as Anita reminds me, and there's no need to remind you, Bendigo and Victoria in particular, the socialist state of Victoria, very much on the left side of the political coin. But nonetheless, that doesn't keep a good girl down. She has been an MC to the convoy of no confidence. Remember that? Convoy that came to Canberra back in 2010, before convoys were fashionable. She was down there fighting against the Gillard Labor government's carbon tax, the one that they promised that they would never introduce, but went on to go and introduce. She went on to be the spokesperson for the anti-carbon tax rallies that were held all over the place. And I got to say that I remember going to those rallies in Canberra and elsewhere. It was probably a bit of a harbinger of the freedom movement that eventually rolled out with all the COVID nonsense. She's been in the entertainment industry for about 44 years, promoting, managing, touring, and she's been heading out bush for decades with many, many artists. So Anita Donlan's claim to fame, though, at the moment, is that she heads up a number of organisations, which are charitable organisations, Beef It Up Australia being the principal one. It's a project. It's a social connection project. It focuses primarily on the social and economic well-being of rural communities. No doubt this organisation, which we're going to be talking about over the course of the next hour, really had its genesis, no doubt, in Anita's own personal history. Anita, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the George Christensen Show. How are you going down there in Bendigo, mate?
Well, thank you so much for that introduction. I felt tired just listening to it. It's like, wow, when you reflect on what you've done over the years, you think, bloody hell, God. But no, down in lovely Bendigo, it's grey, which basically sets the tone for the momentum in this wonderful state of ours. particularly after Mr. Andrews has made the announcement that we're all going to be paying for his stuff up.
Yes, the Commonwealth Games stuff up. He's had plenty of stuff ups, hasn't he? But he keeps on getting re-elected, although there's some rumours going about that he might be on his last throw of the dice, so we can only hope, Anita. But we don't want to spoil a good afternoon talking about Daniel Andrews. We want to talk about you and the wonderful work that you have been doing with Beef It Up Australia, with other organisations such as Let's Get Rural, and also the organisation from which they sprung. But tell me, I've talked a bit about your background. How did you get into the whole thing about rural charity? What drove you to get into that side of things?
Well, I think it stems back to when I was a little girl. My dad was a lion, and he was involved with the Mount Eliza Lions Club. And then when we moved over to Adelaide and back to Adelaide and got the farm in our hands, Dad actually started the local Lions Club. Wow. So giving has always been a big part of my life. I was also involved with the Country Fire Service because, you know, as my dad says, you know, if you're a part of a community, you have to do your bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that goes on in so many rural communities right across the nation. So really this was something that was instilled into you by your family. Obviously, though, that... Yeah, you know, I just can't believe reading that story about someone who's left school at 15 and 4 years later ends up with their own business. But then, you know, to have everything there, what would seem like being at the top of the world, then only to have one of the big major retailers come in and try and kill it, that must have also been something that stuck in your mind about how, I guess, big city or big economic interests can come in and just destroy the fabric of a community, no doubt.
Yes, you're spot on. And, you know, I still have that fire in my belly, but I remember the day that fire in my belly was actually lit. And I actually started a bread war and a milk war and a chocolate war because after I pleaded with this guy to please, you know, put dog food, toilet paper, tomato sauce on special, don't put on special or stock, you know, meat, because the local butcher will be hurting out of that. My bakery, the fruit and veg shop. Well, in this small town now, there's only one supermarket and one pub, and it was a lesson that I learned at a very, very early age. I was very lucky that I had a very good bank manager. You remember back in the day when we actually had a bank manager?
He can't even get cash out of banks now, let alone managers. But anyway.
No. My bank manager would come over every day, get a coffee and a sandwich, and he mentored me. But I also had a mentor that I still have. I was actually in Adelaide the other day doing a deal with the Australian Horizon, well, for the Australian Horizons Foundation, which everyone will find out about soon, which is very exciting. But my mentor, she started the Australian Executive Women's Network, and of course that went on to be the Women's and Men's Network. Mm-hmm. But she was my mentor, and I met her when I was just bought that shop, just bought the bakery, and I went into Adelaide, and I went to this luncheon, and I felt it like a fish out of water, and I realised then that We need mentors. We need people that we can rely on, that we can bounce things off of, and that have been there and done it. And I believe that's put me in good stead to now still do mentoring and business development and a certain amount of life coaching. So what happened to me back in my late teens, early 20s, really has made me the person that I am today.
Mm-hmm. And obviously given you a heart for what goes on in community in rural Australia. It really is the bedrock of rural Australia, isn't it? The community, the networks, the people, and obviously without rural Australia, I'm pretty much one who believes that just Australia itself ceases to exist. So this is fundamental stuff, what you're talking about, isn't it?
And if I can just let you know or tell you a little bit about the foundation, which I've dedicated my time to, and I will be for the unforeseen future.
This is the Australian Horizons. Go on.
Yeah. Australian Horizons Foundation is based up in Georgetown, which is a little tiny town up in far north Queensland. Mm-hmm. And there were two co-founders, John Bethel, third generation cattleman up on 85,000 acres, and a lady who unfortunately has since passed. They actually pulled their community together back in the late 2008, 2009, 2010, when they had the drought, the flood, the fire, Cyclone Yasi, then of course Julia Gillard's live cattle export ban, which was the night
dreadful
in rural Australia where, you know, we saw suicides, mass walk-offs off land, bank foreclosures. It was a terrible, terrible time. And of course,
farmers having to just go out and shoot and kill their herds. I mean, it was dreadful. I can remember that very, very well. I was a member of parliament when that happened, and it certainly wasn't a good time. I mean, I represented the area up there in North Queensland, and I can still remember some of the live exporters and the calls that I got for them, and they were devastated.
It ruined a lot of people, and unfortunately, you know, people that I know from over the years are no longer walking this earth because of that woman. And John gathered a whole heap of people, a whole heap of like-minded people, and what started out to be a small community group looking after their localised community has now, fast forward to today, it's now a national foundation. It is the foundation for rural Australia. All of us, we eat, breathe rural Australia. I was invited to be a board member back in 2016.
Yes.
After they'd seen what I was doing over the years. And the glass is always half full for me. And I just felt that it was time that we celebrated our rural communities. We paid homage to our cattlemen, our farmers, our agribusiness sector, and then every single component of a community that makes that community tick. So everyone from the hairdresser, the pub, the bakery, the fuel station, the mechanic, everybody that plays a role in playing a part in that community at surviving. So I said to the board, I would like to introduce an idea, which I did do. Anyway, subsequently, I stepped off of the board, and I've been running Beef It Up Australia and the Let's Get Rural project ever since. The Let's Get Rural project is actually quite a bizarre story. It was born out of COVID.
Really?
Because you know, it is a social connection project. And leading up to COVID, we were heading out to rural communities, not only providing a night out so then our rural communities could come together for no other reason but, you know, how you going, mate? Have a beer or, you know, a Coke, whatever, and just chill out and have a mental health session without people realising that they're having a mental health session, because we are all humans. We all need each other in some manner. Mm. And we were also, because I also do documentaries and videography and so forth, we were going out and talking to our publicans, because they are, after all, the custodian of the local public house, which is nine times out of ten the oldest business in a community, the oldest building in a community, and it's steeped in history. Mm-hmm. So we thought, well, let's start with the local publican. They know everybody. They know the unofficial mayor. They know the local stalwarts. They all have a bar fly, and if you want to know anything, you always go to the pub.
Yes.
So we were doing that, and it was fantastic. And then COVID hit, and that changed the landscape for us.
Yeah, it must have.
For the better. For the better, obviously. Actually.
Oh, okay. How so?
Well, during COVID, we actually realised how much benefit what we were doing in providing communities to come together for a social connection evening or day. And we sat back and we were talking to people, to our communities and our volunteers and supporters, and asking them how they were feeling about COVID. The interesting thing is that, you know, the COVID was very clever. It had different elements depending on where you were geographically in the country, didn't it? Because you know, some areas were closed down, you were okay, and some others. And so we were noticing even in the communities that were not in lockdown per se, they were feeling it as well. The sense of having that social connection removed from them, even subconsciously. You know, the pub wasn't open. You know, the cafe wasn't open. You know, they couldn't go and stand and have a natter on the footpath without having a mask on. So we found that everything changed. But we also found that our small businesses were really, really hurting. So we put together the Let's Get Rural campaign, and that is basically starting out from the grassroots back then to now. We're actually really focusing on what the community needs. I feel that myself and our troop, we understand every community a lot better now. We know what they need.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about more what the rural Australia needs after this quick break here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Steve Hook.
This court date for March 4th of 2024, which of course is one day before Super Tuesday. So one day before March 5th, she wants to get Trump in office. If this is not election interference by using law against a former president, I don't know what is. And the irony of all of this is they're trying to accuse Trump of election interference, and what they're doing is interfering with this election. It's absurd. It's maddening. Regardless of what your thoughts on Donald Trump are, we are going down the road of a banana republic here. I just think that it's absolutely crazy. The ex-acting attorney general has called foul after Trump court date scheduled for the biggest day of the primary season. And it is the biggest day of the primary season. That's not going to stop Fannie Willis. She wants to proceed with this.
Steve Hook on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The largest ingredient we have here is love.
Food is love. Love is food.
What God's love has always done is given people a platform to be able to show up and do something of service and think, yes, I've contributed to fighting back this pandemic.
And we're continuing to cook for and feed people who are underserved.
They rely on us before the pandemic. So I know with everything that's going on, they rely on us even more.
During the height of the crisis, each and every one of our drivers showed up every day.
As long as this place is open, and this place will be open as long as it's humanly possible, we will make sure you're served your food.
When COVID first hit, the main thing that really clicked in my head was our clients. Just clients, 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 clients. That's it.
You build a relationship with clients when you see them so often. They start to feel like you're a family member.
I try to have them smile before I leave their door.
And deliver the food with love.
We're here to deliver, and that's the job, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
If we don't do it, who would?
It's my job to make sure they're well fed and all their meals are prepared in the right, correct way.
I had a best friend who actually passed away from HIV in 2018. I'm still giving her the chance to live life inside of me, providing meals for the clients.
My father got a stroke a couple years ago, and I think about him. And when I cook over here, it's like cook for my family.
My grandmother died of Alzheimer's, and I know if she had this company, she would live a little longer. That's why I'm here.
And I think that it's kind of difficult to not make it personal.
I was needed, so I had to be there.
To know that I'm here, help feed them, I feel like a superhero.
My name is Ronnie Overson, and I'm a frontline worker for God's Love We Deliver.
And I'm a frontline worker here at God's Love We Deliver.
Y soy un trabajador de primera línea para God's Love We Deliver.
And I'm a frontline worker here at God's Love We Deliver.
Visit glwd.org to learn how you can get involved. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
You're listening to George Christensen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. For the rest of the hour, I'm going to be speaking with Anita Donlan. Anita is heading up a number of different organizations that are basically just rural charities. So I shouldn't say just rural charities. They're fantastic rural charities. One of them is called Beef It Up Australia. the other one, Let's Get Rural. So in a nutshell, you were just talking about these organisations before. How would you describe the mission of Beef It Up Australia, Anita?
Simple. We are focused on providing social and economic support to rural communities. Our rural communities, they go through their own troubles. They have got a mountain of red tape that they have to jump through thanks to the government. When you're looking at the Murray-Darling Basin communities and the communities that are reliant on the Murray-Darling, they've got that issue that they have to worry about as well. You know, there's the issues of, you know, our lovely Prime Minister saying that we have to, our producers here have to pay an import tax to of products imported into Australia. I mean, that's just crazy. And many, many more. I mean, we've got this whole voice situation of them not being able to dig a hole. We've got the live sheep export troubles that are bouncing around the place. I mean, is it going to reflect back onto the beef export? There's our rural communities have got a lot that they have to worry about.
They do indeed.
They've got rising cost of production. You know, we're looking at a forecast of $79 billion of production in 2023-24, but that's a fall of 14%. So, you know, why is that so? So we have to start talking about let distance not divide us, which, you know, the Australian Horizons Foundation, which that is the national foundation, the charity, and so Beef It Up and Let's Get Rural are the projects connected to that for delivering.
Yeah. Well, let me just ask about Let's Get Rural. You've given a very good outline for Beef It Up Australia. What would you see the mission of Let's Get Rural, the organisation that you've set up there?
Well, that program is very, very important because that's the program that we are actually not only capturing the stories and the history, but we're also providing the communities the opportunity to talk about their community and to have that sense of pride coming through. Mm-hmm. But it's also about us relaying that message back into the cities and to other communities. The whole mental health aspect, which we don't talk mental health, we're all about mental health, but we don't talk mental health, or I should say mental wellness, mental fitness, is very, very, very touchy subject. So what we do is we come around the other way and we allow through this project to not only come together as a community at their local public house with an event, with a night, with one of the shows that I've produced or somebody else has produced, but it's also an opportunity for them to brag about their town and for us to showcase the local producers. You know, there's a lot of cottage industries out there that are taking advantage of selling online, and a lot of people don't know about them. They don't know about the people behind the business, and that's where we're coming from. We're getting back to grassroots and saying, this person is just like you, but this person does this, so you can benefit in some way.
Yeah. So I think it's probably a good time now than any to drop a couple of websites so that people can go and check out these organisations. Australian Horizons, Australian Horizons Foundation, runs a number of raffles, and I'm assuming that that's part of where the fundraising comes from for a whole heap of other initiatives that flows from it.
Yeah, and this one, George, is so close to my heart because it's for the kids. Not only are there going to be a couple of rural bursaries presented through another partner with the proceeds, but for our proceeds, we're going to be doing Get Set in the Basin Take 2. We've already done Get Set in the Basin Take 1, where we took Jason Singh from Taxi Ride and our music ambassador out to, we went Menindee, Blighty, Mullamine and Barramundrook, and that was just before COVID. This one, like I said, is so close to my heart because it's for the kids, and with our portion of the funds raised, we're going to be doing may not be those four towns, but will definitely be communities along the Murray-Darling Basin community to bring the families and the kids together. And I'll tell you why. Families, the parents are stressed. They're stressed because of the price of water. They're stressed of the price of pressures of running their business, running their cow factory, or as a friend says, they call them paddocks. They're stressed. Now, these children, and I know this for a fact because I've spoken to a lot of families, their children are also stressed. We don't want our children growing up thinking that it's okay to be stressed. It's okay to yell at mum or dad. It's okay to sit at the table with a pile of bills. Now, okay, everybody goes through those pressures, but you've got to remember that these people grow our food and yet they're going through so much pressure, extra pressure than you and I are. And that is why we're starting to see more and more families walking off the land. We're hearing of stories, even, I mean, I have for many, many years, where dad would say to his son, son, go and get a job somewhere else. Don't worry about farming. It's useless. You know, it's unforgiving and it's just, you know, hard. And we don't want that. We want our families to be a happy family unit, which is the way they are intended to. Mm-hmm. And we want our families to sit back and laugh and learn together. So this is all about education, this raffle. Do it for the kids. But our component, we're doing it a little bit different. We're going to be doing something which is absolutely wonderful. And other people, your listeners, are more than welcome. Everyone's always more than welcome to join us on the road. And we see it quite often. You know, so other people can actually experience what the people who grow our food and move our country is actually going through.
Fantastic. Now, if you want to check out and help with the fundraising, ahfraffles.org, that's the Australian Horizons Foundation, ahfraffles.org. But the two, organisations, charities that Anita has kicked off, Beef It Up Australia, you can find at www.beefitupaustralia.org. And then the program Let's Get Rural at www.letsgetrural.org. So go and have a look at those organizations there, and you might be able to assist, or you might want to get involved in some way. Now, Anita, I know you mentioned the Murray-Darling Basin before. I know that the Murray-Darling Basin communities are very much, close to your heart. There seems to be this similar story with farming communities, though. It doesn't matter whether it's in the Murray-Darling Basin or even my part of the world, North Queensland, where, you know, that there's always this perceived or imagined environmental risk that the farmers pose. In North Queensland, it's, you know, apparently a threat to the Great Barrier Reef. And so there's this whole host of government rules, red tape and regulation that are foisted upon the producers and really do cut them down, really do what you said before, you know, which is cause some sort of generational jitters, where dad really doesn't want to pass the farm on to the young bloke. You know, he sees it as a burden, as a curse, and would rather his young bloke go off to university and become an engineer or something like that. We see this now, this same thing writ large right around the world, whether it be in Europe, particularly we had the Netherlands there, where the government basically pointed the finger at the farmers and said that you guys are the ones causing all the climate problems, and we're going to have to thin out the herd. We're going to have to literally thin out the herd and thin you out as farmers. There was a huge revolt in relation to that. We saw it in Sri Lanka, where farmers were told that they couldn't use certain on-farm products, chemicals that normally were used by those farmers, because, again, environmental reasons, and it would have caused the farming economy to collapse in Sri Lanka. But everywhere you look, this same sort of mantra is being rolled out. The environmentalists, or the rabid extreme Greens, are basically demonising farming, suggesting that it's something that is is really bad and is terrible. This has got to be something that's playing out amongst the psyche of farmers across Australia. When you're sort of talking to farming families, are they feeling this sort of ongoing campaign of demonisation?
They do. And I'll give you an example. I know a family, excuse me, who a cattle family, and they are very, very scared. Well, they were. They're not so much now that the laws came in about these lunatics going and letting calves out or pinching calves or, you know, tying themselves to posts. If they trespass, they can go to jail. But, you know, we had farmers that were having their stock let out. People don't understand that, you know, a cow out on the road can kill somebody in a car. I'll give you another perfect example of how the greenies, and I'll call them that, really don't get it, and the politicians don't get it. And I've actually did a video on it. It's on the Beef It Up Australia YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And I went and I was filming up the Murray-Darling Basin, and the farmer rang me and he said, I want you to come and have a look at something. I said, okay. So I went and actually had a look. I drove down to the river with him. And he said, how stupid are the greenies? Look at this tree. And I said, that's terrible. All the soil had washed away. There were exposed roots. It was just hanging on. It was going to fall into the river at any time, like all the others around on that bend. And he said, just stop and think about where are the koalas going to live? This corridor is where the koalas are. So if more trees are falling into the river and more trees are dying because of the environmental impact which is forming on land, what about the koalas? And that, I remembered that. That stuck in my mind. I thought, you know what, he's damn right. It's not only the politicians that are absolutely disconnected and their advisors and their public servants, but it's the actual activists that need to get out and actually understand what is going on. Most city people, and I do not say this in any disrespect at all, they do not stop and think about where their food comes from. So any of your listeners, if they could go to their fridge or their pantry and stop and look at what's in there and just stop and reflect that a person made that. And if it was made in Australia and produced in Australia, then a family just like us, you and me, them, they did that so we can eat. And it's very unfair that they have to go through the hoops like that, like they're being made to.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And on the one hand, we've got those lower-level cretins, the ones that run around and try and upset farm operations, family farm operations, thinking that they're doing some social justice move by, you know, cutting fences or doing something stupid, something that's illegal. But yet then we also have these globalist elites, people like John Kerry, you know, the former US Secretary of State, who actually earlier this month, in fact, he gave an address, a keynote address, to the US Department of Agriculture's AIM for Climate Summit. And this is what he said. He said, a lot of people have no clue that agriculture contributes about 33% of all the emissions of the world. We can't get to net zero. We don't get this job done unless agriculture is front and center as part of the solution. So all of us understand here the depths of this mission. He later added that our lives depend on the ability to lower emissions within the farming sector. Now, I got to say, our lives don't depend upon lowering emissions. Our lives depend on having enough food to eat. And it seems to me that people like John Kerry and all of those that fly around in the Lear jets and their private jets, swanning around to all of these climate change summits and global talk fests, seem to think that putting more bars on farmers, that putting more restriction, more red tape, more green tape on farmers is going to save us. But yet what they're actually doing is they're making life much more difficult. They're making it much more expensive to actually grow things, to graze things. What they're doing is essentially causing a massive problem, and that is going to be a global food shortage. And I think that that's what they're actually gearing up to be quite honest, Anita. But just going back to the Murray-Darling Basin, this problem in particular is one where there is a lot of lies that are told about the Murray-Darling Basin issue, a lot of myths. I mean, I didn't intend to go down this rabbit hole, but there's some things that sort of get on your nerves when you hear people start talking about the Murray-Darling Basin like they're experts.
It does, but the one thing that really gets on my goat is when people say, "I'm going up to the river. I'm going onto the river for a holiday. I'm going for a day drive to Echuca."
Yeah.
I stop and say to them, "Do you understand what is going on? Do you understand that the water in the Murray-Darling Basin is a commodity? It is not owned by us. It is owned by overseas interests. And it is being used as a commodity, and our farmers is being pawned. So while you sit on the edge of the river thinking how beautiful it is, walk down to the edge, not too close because it'll fall away. Walk down there and have a look at the damage that is being done. When an environmental flow is sent downstream to South Australia, it is continually cutting away at the banks.
Mm.
And the cutting away of those banks is erosion. And when we start seeing all these so-called environmental flows, and then the flooding like in the Barmer Choke, and then we start looking at the cost of water, and then it is absolutely ludicrous that we live in a country where we are seeing a humanitarian crisis rolling out, not just because our food production is going to be impacted, but you have to stop and think about our communities in those Murray-Darling Basin communities. I'll give you an example. There's one road, I won't tell you where it is, but there's one road, and from one main arterial road to another, it's a back road. There were seven houses on that road that used to house families of the managers of the dairy.
Mm.
The dairy was bought up by a multi-corporation. I won't say corporation, a multi-corporation. You know what I'm getting at there.
Yes, yes.
One person living in one of those houses, the others are going to rack and ruin. Now, those six families, if they all had two children, that's 12 children that would have been going to the local school. Out of those six houses, we'll say that there were two parents. So that's 12 people who were spending their income in the local small town. That's 24 people, individuals, that would have been using services in that community, doctors, so forth. Now, when people walk off the land, whether they want to or not, those services are no longer required, which means those services are then removed from a community, leaving the people who are still in that community with no services.
Mm.
You know how it works. You've been there.
Yep. I've seen it.
So when people stop and think about the Murray-Darling Basin, think further afield. Basin situation is such a mess. There's myths. There's Darren DeBortoli actually has got a great page, Murray-Darling Basin Myths, I think it's called.
Yes.
You know, we can, for those that aren't across it, just start reading. It is one big mess. But the reality of it is you can point the finger to the Greens in South Australia.
Yep. Yep. Well, often they're the cause of all sorts of problems, the Greens. We'll talk more about the Murray-Darling Basin and rural Australia after this quick break here on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
Well, we have some interesting weather coming up globally. First of all, the heat wave that's raging in Europe now will reverse by the time we get to the end of August and the first week of September. So you folks that are boiling away in Europe, well, guess what? Another shot of cool is coming down the road. Now, the central part of the United States has had a cool, wet summer overall. I'm not talking Texas here. I'm talking further north in the Corn Belt. And we have a phenomenon there called corn sweat, where there's a lot of water in the corn. And when it gets hot sometimes, the dew points come up quite a bit, and plus the ground is wet. Well, we're going to see some corn sweat in the central part of the United States. Now, I know if you're living in Australia or the UK, you're putting saying, going, what do I care about corn sweat for? But we could have some outrageous dew points. In fact, some of the heat indexes could hit 110. Oh, my goodness. That would be like the actual temperatures that we've hit in the 1930s. And, of course, we've got Hillary that's going up into California. And I think we're going to have a tropical storm hit on the Texas Gulf Coast south of Corpus Christi Tuesday or Wednesday, and another feature develop in the Caribbean. But you know something? It's late August. It's supposed to be hot. It's supposed to have tropical storms and hurricanes. So maybe it's much ado about nothing. Anyway, I want everyone to have a great weekend. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watch Dog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only way you know.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
In a March 19 executive order, President Zelensky invoked martial law to ban 11 opposition parties. The outlawed parties consisted of the entire left-wing socialists or anti-NATO parties in Ukraine. Openly fascist and pro-Nazi parties, like the Azov National Corps, were unaffected by the presidential decree. President Zelensky ordered an unprecedented domestic propaganda initiative to nationalize all television news broadcasting and combine all channels into a single 24-hour channel called United News to tell the truth about war. On April 12th, President Zelensky announced the arrest of his main political rival, Viktor Medvedchuk, by the SBU security services.
Thanks for listening and being part of the George Christensen Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the George Christensen Show here on TNT Radio. We're talking everything rural Australia today, particularly farming and small business in our rural and regional areas. Talking with Anita Donlan, who heads up a number of different organisations, Beef It Up Australia, which is focused on social and economic well-being for rural communities, particularly to do with mental health, and also a project that she's driving, a social connection project in rural Australia called Let's Get Rural. You can find more about those two, that organisation, I should say, and that project at beefitupaustralia.org and letsgetrural.org. Anita, we were talking about the Murray-Darling Basin before the break. Obviously, that whole myth that's been developed around the Murray-Darling Basin just shows how lies, if they're repeated often enough, end up being accepted as the truth. Because sadly, I think that a lot of the Australian community, the non-rural community, is hoodwinked about the issues in the Murray-Darling Basin. Also, the media, whether they believe the lies that they print or whether they just are going along with it, who knows? But nonetheless, they still spew out all of the myths to do with the Murray-Darling Basin, even up until now. And it pretty much underwrites the policy position of state and federal governments regarding the Murray-Darling Basin. In fact, I think that really the policy seems to only keep on tracking in a bad direction that is based on all of those myths and lies that are touted about by the Green Movement. And I say this not to relitigate the issue about the Murray-Darling Basin, but it just shows how these environmental myths end up just completely running roughshod over reality, running roughshod over the truth, and they end up hurting people. Now, I spoke before about things going on in other countries. I want to focus on Ireland, which I touched on before. Ireland, the farmers there are actually facing a proposal to kill off 200,000 cows over the next 3 years, and that's to meet their climate emissions reduction goals that they signed up to under one of these COP 23 that they had in Scotland there. So they're going to wipe out about 10% of their dairy cow production. That's going to be disastrous to farmers right throughout Ireland. Now, to date, the Australian government has said we've got no plans to do that, but we do know that agriculture, if you believe in the whole theory of man-made climate change and that this is going to spell the end of the planet, then you must recognise that agriculture makes up a big chunk of the emissions. And I fear that one day we are going to wake up and have some silly proposal like this in our country. Is this something that, farmers get a bit nervous about when they hear the next climate change policy that's being put forward by Canberra? Are they a bit jumpy about their future because of this constant shifting of the goalposts when it comes to environmental policy in this country, Anita?
Absolutely they do. But more so the frustration of the fact that our pollies, our public servants, even some agribusiness representatives, just do not get reality. Now, our farmers, okay, so a lot of your listeners may not know, but a lot of Australia was actually formed on soldier settlement blocks.
That's right.
When our
gave
farmers
it to the, gave it to the veterans who came back, and they allotted them land. Some of it was based on ballots, but they allotted them land and they went out and they farmed the land. So that's why we've got such a great farming family background in Australia.
That's right, and it's generational. But then you take one step back and you have a look as to where our forefathers actually developed agribusiness in the country. They would only sow a crop, an error obviously, in a region that would grow it.
Yes.
So that's why we have different belts around our country that grows different things. Now, the thing that I have always said, and I've written many times to different politicians, and that is please go and speak to the custodians of our land. I'm not talking about Indigenous. I'm not even going to start talking about that other business. Go and start talking to the custodians of our agribusiness sector, of our land, and talk to them about the best way to look after the land. They have been doing it for generations. That's why we have almanacs. If only all of these lunatics would go and actually look at a farmer's almanac and actually see weather patterns.
Yeah.
Now, my father's 88, and to this day he still predicts the weather because they know how to do it. They've been there. And it can be taught. I know a lot of other farmers that are out there, younger farmers, who know how to read the weather.
Yes.
Who know when to sow. They know when not to. And as far as the animal liberationists go, well, I have never met a farmer who is cruel to an animal because that animal is actually money.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you?
Yep. Yep.
You know, these guys have just got no idea. Just like a lot of people in the city and a lot of people in rural communities, that we have to start opening their eyes, George. We have to start saying, you know, let distance not divide us, stop believing the rubbish and start getting out and let's get rural. And people are more than welcome to come with us and we'll introduce them to people who know
that's a challenge.
Know the lay of the land.
Well, that's a challenge in an offer. So that you think that is the way that we start getting empathy and change is by, bringing city folk, people who may not have had any connection with country Australia, out
Correct.
To the country. Is that what you think the solution is?
Correct. And you know what? We will give the rural communities an economic injection and we will raise their morale. We do it already and people are more than welcome to come along. But just on a point of education,
mm-hmm.
The most empowering thing that we can do to a person, doesn't matter how old they are, is educate them. We don't have to tell them because that's not education. But by education, by actually opening the dialogue and and telling them something that they didn't know and letting them go off and explore that knowledge is the most empowering thing that we can do. And that's what we have to start doing in this country. We have to start educating.
Yeah, yeah. So away from education, what do you think, Anita, are some of the big things that government could and should be doing to actually support our farmers rather than hinder them?
Well, first and foremost, they have to start looking at the Murray-Darling Basin. That's yes. the first thing. And unfortunately, it's muddy waters, pardon the pun, of, you know, state, federal. You know, yes. Pauline has always been a big one on the water issue. So has Malcolm, you know, and so that's one thing. The other thing that we have to start talking about very seriously is the cost of fuel, the cost of diesel, yes. the diesel rebates. You know, I was very heavily involved in the anti-RSRT rallies when, you know, thankfully Mr. Turnbull did not, thankfully he won and it didn't come in, but now we're seeing a resurgence of that. And even a couple of weekends ago, we saw a convoy going into Canberra. And, you know, Craig Kelly, he was a big supporter of ours at the time when he was in Parliament, of trying to get the message across. The third most important thing is let farmers farm and let the farmers actually have an input in the consultation. I hate that word, but a consultation to the relevant bodies and the MPs. And,
yeah.
And the MPs have to start getting off their backsides and actually going and having a look at yeah. what's going on. You know, there's an array of things. I mean, there's, you know, can you plant this tree? Can you dig this hole? You know, when we had that foot and mouth disease threat, you know, yes, they put some things in place, but no, it wasn't what the agribusiness sector thought it should have been. Mm-hmm. So they don't have the foresight. If I'm a doctor, I can't go and pull your tooth out and call myself a dentist. So how can a politician sitting in Canberra or in their capital state building and say, well, I know best, and talk to an advisor who think they know best? Yeah. Communication and the education has to be widened, and it has to happen fast.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I completely and utterly agree with you there. The more that actually, I've got to say, there was a senator. He is now deceased. The name is going to escape me. This is absolutely terrible. But anyway, there was a senator from Victoria. He was a Democratic Labor Party senator when it sort of came back into a second life.
Yes, I do know. I know John, I can't think of his name either.
John, whose name is on the tip of my tongue, but I cannot remember it. But anyway, he came up with a brilliant program, and it was the Australian Manufacturing, Farming and Fishing Parliamentary Program, and it never ever come to life. But I think that this has got to be part of the solution as well, which goes back to what you just said, education. If you could suddenly decide to get particularly a lot of those city-based MPs to go off for a week and actually do a stint on a farm in a country business where they're doing some manufacturing, on a fishing vessel even, I think that you would start to get some change, because therein lies empathy when you're actually seeing the kind of oppressive nature of a lot of the rules and regulations that befall these people that are just small business people, just trying to get along. And it's generational, it's in their blood, it's in their family. But when you see that, you know, the impact of the very laws that you're presiding over, I think that you've got probably, you're going to end up with a heart to do something about it and change it and make life a bit easier. And when we make life a bit easier for our farmers and primary producers, we make life a bit easier for everyone, because after all, we all benefit from the food that they produce, from the fibre that they produce.
That's right. These people feed us. So, you know, when we're sitting down having breakfast, dinner, lunch, whatever, grabbing a latte, our rural communities, they not only are farmers, but they're manufacturers. And as far as the moving of the products around the country, we need our truckies. Then we need everybody in amongst all of that. The one thing that I don't want is I don't want to see funeral directors getting any more busier than they are.
That's
my
for sure.
only one wish. That's my one wish in life. Doesn't matter if it's city or country. I only want them to be busy on a natural basis.
Because I can tell you when I'm sitting out
with a farmer who is ready to drink everything in his shed, that's bad.
That's what we don't want to see any more of. So well done to you, Anita, on the work that you are doing on behalf of Rural Australia. I really would encourage people to go and check out these organisations, beefitupaustralia.org, letsgetrural.org, and you can also go and Google the Australian Horizons Foundation, where you can find more info about them. Anita, thank you so much for joining us and telling a little bit about the work you're doing. Is there anything you quickly wanted to wrap up with?
Buy the raffle ticket, ahfraffles.org, and you could also win. And you know what? We did a survey the other day, and we asked, do you buy a ticket for the cause or the prize? And most said for the cause. So there you go, ahfraffles.org.
That's lovely.
We need you.
Thank you very much. Go and support those good people. Join you again very soon. TNT Radio, the George Christensen Show.